Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 35 of the Kitchen Gods podcast. I'm Michelle Dahl. With me, as always, is Ken Herskowitz.
Hello. It's been a while.
It has been a minute. I got to get some dust off my my microphone here.
Yeah, look at that.
I'm super excited to be back.
Cobwebs and, you know.
Ambiance.
It is. It is. I had to remember how to set the equipment back up over here.
For sure. But I'm excited to have it all out again. Weird to hear my voice in my ears.
It's good to hear your voice in my ears, though. I'm very excited, as I'm sure as all our, you know, all the listeners.
Our listener.
All of
yes,
them.
Yes, thanks, listener, for coming back.
There's more than one, usually.
Oh, thank you guys for coming on back. I appreciate it. And keep spreading the word about all of our fun episodes. It's summer.
It is.
Right?
It is.
We're a couple days into summer. What is your kid's favorite treat when it's super hot out?
Pizza. No, they're ice cream kids, but they're not like huge, you know, huge ice cream kids. And and it's funny because it's not seasonal with them.
No,
they don't have like they'll eat ice cream in the winter just as much as they will in the summer. Not to ruin your whole premise here, but you know,
no, not at all.
Go on. What's your kid's favorite summer tram?
Well, popsicles. He goes through maybe 4 or 5 popsicles a day.
Cool.
Easily. And then after dinner, he gets an ice cream of some sort, but it's constant. And it's something that I think is genetic. My grandfather would go through a gallon tub. He would get these massive cardboard looking tubs,
right?
And it would take him about a week to go through it. And he was 6'4", skinniest man you ever met.
Wow.
But he would just plow through this ice cream. And what's awful is I can't eat it. It makes me really, really sick.
That much dairy, right?
Yeah. I was fine when I was a kid, but now it's like, no, nope. It's got to really
you're
be worth
old,
it.
Sorry. No more dairy for you.
Oh, man. Oh. But they're actually coming out with some really fun coconut oat milk versions.
And, that's good.
When I feel like it. Or I make my own. But
that'd be pretty close.
Maybe. Ice cream has always been super magical for me. I love making it. It's one of my... Everybody always wants to know when you're a pastry chef, what's your favorite thing to make? And I think ice cream, well, everything.
Do they sound like that when they ask you, though?
Yeah, they do. People chasing you down the street. What's your favorite thing to make? Ice cream, for sure, is like top 5 because, like so many pastry dishes, it's completely transformative.
Right.
You start out with A and you end up with 5.
Right.
You know, it's completely
hot
different.
When liquid, awesome.
And eggs and sugar and milk, and you end up with a frozen confection. Whereas when you're a savory chef, you know, if you start with a chicken, I hope it's a chicken that you're pulling out of the oven. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be something completely transformed.
You never met my mother, ba-dum-bum.
So yeah, I think ice cream is one of my favorite magical transformations that happens. It's milk, it's sugar. Sometimes it's eggs, salted ice. We can trace ice cream all the way back to around 50 AD.
Wow. How?
Well, in historical texts, or you would see paintings or sculptures, not sculptures so much, but you would see paintings and you'd be like, that person in the corner, are they eating ice cream? And you could.
How did they pose so long back then? It wasn't like a snapshot, right? So this is, you know, and it still looks like a solid ice cream where they had them in some kind of freezer.
Well, you know, it's probably food poisoning because of or absinthe. It was the wormwood making everybody just really slow. And the painters were like, yes.
And the painters
sketching
were really
fast. Away. Yeah. but no, it goes way, 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 all the way back. Even to a young orphaned boy named Lucius Domitius Anhobarbus. His father had died of an edema, of a blood clot, when he was very young. And his mother... name was Agrippina.
Okay.
And she was a sister to Caligula.
Ooh.
Yeah. And they were exiled. Okay. So his mother and his sister and her sisters had all been accused of trying to overthrow Caligula. Lucius changed his name to Nero and lived with a paternal aunt who was also the mother of the current emperor, Claudius.
Okay.
When Caligula dies, Claudius becomes emperor, and Nero's mom, Agrippina, convinces Claudius to
make
marry
ice cream.
No, not yet.
Oh,
but then they are going to send people out to the one. Yeah. To marry her and to adopt Nero as his son. So he already has a natural son and now he's got Nero as well. But the mother is very like puppet strings in the background.
Clearly.
When Nero turns 16, he marries his stepsister, Claudia. people really actually liked him a lot. There are a lot of historical records where like everybody hated him. He was terrible. He ends up being a terrible ruler when he becomes a ruler. But the truth is he was very sympathetic to the common man. He was kind of anti-one percenter at the time. And that's, you know, those are the people who are writing the history. So those are the people who are saying that he's not a popular person.
Got it.
If there were bad harvests, if there was an earthquake, he would lobby for these people to have tax abatements.
Okay.
And then would come back and say, you know, we need to tax the really wealthy. We're not taxing them enough, and really putting in this kind of infrastructure into the government. In 54 AD, Emperor Claudius is killed. Murder?
Mm-hmm. By ice cream?
Probably. By ice cream?
I'm trying to jump to the end of the story.
He was iced. So everyone assumes it's Nero's mom, Agrippina, because, you know, she's like the first Florida cheer mom that there is. She's out there. She's killing anyone who is against her son. She's making sure that the entire staff is all pro Nero, mm-hmm. so that when Claudius does die, all he has to do is show up and take the seat.
Got
and
you're
like, well, this makes sense.
Yeah.
And at these banquets and such, they would have people bringing ice down from the mountains. Ice that had perhaps hung out underneath a beehive that had been flavored with honey.
Okay.
Or it would be under a pomegranate tree, and their pomegranates would have fallen into it, mm-hmm. and flavored these very first ices.
Hmm.
Turns out all this helicopter parenting is nothing new. Nero renames himself after becoming emperor as Emperor Nero, ruler of rulers, chosen by Ptah, beloved of Isis, the sturdy armed one who struck the foreign lands victorious for Egypt, ruler of rulers, chosen of Nun, who's the water ruler, who loves him. So that was his title, his very Game of Thrones.
It's a long, it's like a 13-inch driver's license.
It's a George R. R. Martin level name. So yeah, that's Nero. He comes to power. He eats lots of delicious frozen ices. Mm-hmm. But just to tie up his little loose end, things go about as well as you would expect. His mother Agrippina had any competition and dissenters murdered.
Mm-hmm.
He married multiple times. He took lovers. A few times he even dressed up as the bride and would marry a man. His mother did not approve of one of the earlier women that he married. So he had her murdered. He had his mother murdered on a ship. So this ship is supposed to blow up and Agrippina is supposed to die. Nero's killing his mom.
Oh, gotcha.
Takes a hit out on his mom. Mom makes it off the boat.
Of course.
Swims to shore where one of his soldiers is waiting there. He's like, are you okay? She's like, yes. Okay. Stab. So Agrippina's gone.
Okay.
She's been taken care of.
They should have just stabbed her first. It would at least save the boat.
You know, and Nero unfortunately goes from being a man of the people to really losing his sense of right and wrong completely. Mm. He exiles his bride for not being able to have kids. Mm. There's a huge public outcry because she was a lovely person. He says, no, wait. It wasn't that. She was unfaithful. So he has her put to death. There's a massive fire throughout Rome. And it just so happens that this area that all burns down, all these poor people, he would actually like to have made into his palace. He had designs to make this giant palace, and suddenly the ground has been raised. Yeah. But he had an alibi. He was about half an hour away. There's no CSI Rome yet.
No one that listens to him, right?
Right. So we don't know if he really burnt it down or not. But after his fruity frozen treat, life goes way downhill. He runs away with some loyal servants. He knows that he's about to be put to death for his poor ruling of Rome.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to commit suicide.
Okay.
But he's a little chicken. Mm. So he gets one of his assistants to commit suicide. He's like, Carl, I gotta get through this, Carl. I need to see how you would do it. Kill yourself, Carl. So Carl's like,
it's a great honor, sir.
He's like, no, do it. So Carl kills himself. You're still like,
looks worse than I expected.
I don't know how to do this. I don't feel good about this. So he gives his sword to another servant and he's like, just kill me. So he dies that way.
All right.
Yeah, it's sad. But, you know, these ices are out there. They're starting to take over the world. Another person who is often credited with the kind of start of these frozen treats is King Tang, T-A-N-G. Of the Shang dynasty. No, unfortunately, you know, I was wondering if he came up with any kind of orange sherbets or type of ice creams, but
missed opportunity.
Totally. So King Tang was a good leader. He had a method of mixing up ice and milk concoctions, which is really amazing because you don't get a lot of dairy-based anything coming out of Asia at that time.
Okay.
They would use like buffalo milk to make these frozen ice creams. He was a wonderful leader. He managed to win support from 40 other kingdoms through fair rule and delicious cream treats.
When you can bribe people with ice cream, I mean,
right. And so, of course, if it's taking off in China, then that means it's going to find its way to Europe, you know, via Marco.
Mm-hmm. People stealing tea.
Polo. Marco.
Oh, sorry. I missed the cue.
Jeez. I would be drowning.
Yes, you here. Would. Sorry. Yep. Sorry. Try it again.
All right. So ice cream found its way from China to Europe via Marco.
Polo?
Marco. Marco.
Polo, it's over here. Polo, camera Polo. In front of you.
Ow, my me. Eye. Ear tubes. I have ear tubes. So yeah, in the 1200s, Marco Polo tries this delicious concoction and he takes it back to Europe where it gets served in the courts. And it was, but it's super hard to come by. Okay. So yeah, it's spreading around the world, but who has a team of men to go up and get heavy blocks of ice and bring it down and flavor it with honey and whatnot?
Nero does, for sure.
I don't. Nero did.
Yeah, that's
true. And then it died. So it slowly starts to take hold, but there's no real manufacturing process in place. No one is producing this at scale at all. In the 1700s, I mean, George Washington was serving it. Thomas Jefferson's genius chef, James Hemings, was making it. And actually, ice cream is one of the few recipes that's written in Thomas Jefferson's hand.
Oh, wow.
So he would have gotten that from France. Because in France,
how did he walk when he couldn't wash his hand?
Like, no, he couldn't wash his hand. In his own hand. He wrote it in his hand.
If you're going to go Marco Polo, I'm going with a hand wash.
Marco. So, right. So James Hemings was making it. And again, I promised to do an episode on James at some point. He deserves multiple episodes. But it's still a huge pain in the butt to make this ice cream until some geniuses developed this sort of hand crank machine. So that was kind of very Industrial Revolution, where people are adding salt to the ice to make it super cold so that you can have this lovely ice cream hand churned. But still, it's going to be small amounts of ice cream. In the early 1800s, after Napoleon, a lot of Italians were moving to Great Britain, bringing their delicious gelato with them. Do you know the difference between gelato and ice cream?
It's the eggs, right? Is it the eggs? No, tell me.
No, gelato is churned slower.
Okay.
And it's actually less fat on the inside. Yeah. In the recipe, there's less fat and it's churned slower. So that creates a smaller ice crystal.
Okay.
So you have something much smoother, a much smoother mouthfeel than you have with regular ice cream.
It's airier feeling too. Like, it's not as dense.
It's a different machine and it's actually much more expensive. They're a pain in the butt, but they're lovely. So
is the eggs custard? Where's the difference?
Yep. So that's French ice cream. And it's also gelato. Most gelato recipes, not all of them, most of them, you start with a crème anglaise base. So you're heating up milk and sugar.
Mm-hmm.
When that starts to maybe slowly boil around the outside, you add that to some egg yolks that you have whisked with sugar.
Okay.
So you add that slowly to temper the eggs so the eggs don't scramble.
Okay.
And then you pour that back into the pot and you cook it until it's napant. And napant means you can drag your finger across the back of a wooden spoon and it's going to leave a trail.
Got it. Okay.
It's not going to fill right in. And then after that, you take it off the heat and you let it chill. Some people will even leave it out for about 24 hours. And this helps the fat to coagulate in a way that's very pleasing once you churn it.
Okay.
It makes for a fatter tasting ice cream, even though the fat content hasn't changed.
Okay.
So you cure it for about 24 hours and then you pour it into your ice cream machine, which has the dasher. And that's the thing that's spinning around.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays, I mean, if you have a KitchenAid ice cream mixer, the bowl is something that you keep in the freezer all the time.
Okay.
And it's this cold plate technology. It gets so cold that it stays frozen once you take it out. And that's what a lot of the early ice cream trucks had in the back. They had this plate that was like hyper frozen, so frozen, so that if I put something new on top of it, it would freeze that. And it would last all day long in these trucks. Wow, they had them really well insulated. And it was really cool technology. So those KitchenAid mixers today are still the same technology. There's no generator in there. There's no, you know, air compressor. So it's so hyper cold. You put it on the base, mm-hmm. and you have your dasher in the middle, and the dasher starts to move around, scraping up frozen material from the inside of this hypercharged. Right. And you get these little crystals, and that's how you get your ice cream. They also make this neat ice cream maker. It's a ball, and you put your ingredients right into the center of the ball, pack it with ice along the outside, and then you roll it back and forth to each other. And in like half an hour, it's ice cream.
And you eat it right out of it because it's two balls.
I've always wanted it, but I never sprung for it. Someday.
Don't mistake it for the hamster's ball.
Don't. Potato ice cream is terrible. It's furry. So anywho, all these Italians moved to Great Britain. A lot of them are incredibly poor. They're going to be street vendors.
Right.
And they're selling ice cream on the street or gelato on the street. And they're known as Hokey Pokey Men.
Well, how'd that name come about?
Well, it's something that they used to sing. It was in a lot of their jingles that they would make up. I have one around here somewhere.
One spoon in, you take one spoon.
Oh, here it is. Hokey Pokey, penny a lump. That's the stuff to make you jump. But yeah, so there are all these Hokey Pokey men selling tiny amounts of ice cream. In New Zealand, Hokey Pokey is actually a flavor of ice cream. It's their second most popular after vanilla.
And what is it?
And it's vanilla with chunks of honeycomb toffee in it.
Ooh.
Yeah. Have you ever had a crunchy bar?
What do you mean crunchy? Like the brand?
Like the British? No, yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's fantastic. It's like this weird honey. It's, I can't describe it. Okay. It's like sponge candy, but it's not soft.
Okay. I don't know.
It crumbles and dissolves in your mouth. And then to have that in ice cream,
it sounds awesome.
Just want to go to New Zealand. So I've been working on my New Zealand accent.
Yeah. Cause that's the only way they let you in.
Laserdisc. Laserdisc.
You've got two words. is Laserdisc one word?
Upload the Laserdisc to your domain.
It's pretty good.
Thanks.
How'd you study that? What? Who was that? Who would you base
that on? Wait, don't tell me where somebody mentioned Laserdisc is a great word for that. And I was like, yeah, it's fantastic. And then walking around today, I heard somebody on their phone saying, no, upload it to their domain. I'm like, domain
is perfect.
Domain, Laserdisc and domain. I can be an IT officer.
It is the only way they let you into New Zealand is if you can pass for New Zealander.
Kiwi.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good. All right. I'm on it. Anywho, so these Hokey Pokey men in Europe and in big cities in the States would sell penny licks.
Okay.
And a penny lick.
That's what you think.
I hardly know her. Penny, come here, Penny. Penny's like, I hate you. I'm going home. No, a penny lick is a heavy bottomed glass dish that gave the illusion of more ice cream. So it was this teeny tiny little spoonful of ice cream on the top of this dish.
Glass.
But yeah, exactly. Yeah. And in the sun, how did that work without like bursting into flame? I don't know.
That's why it's long enough for somebody to paint a picture in 50 AD. So.
So the vendor would give you this tiny scoop of ice cream and you'd stand next to the cart licking it.
Okay.
And you'd lick it clean and then you hand it back to them.
They fill it again.
They say, thank you. And they would dip it. Well, first they dip it in this barrel of water that's been sitting there for who knows how long.
Right?
And then they wipe it off. I assume on their shirt, like, right. have you ever been to a bar and the bartender like takes his shirt.
Polishes the glass. Yep, there you go.
Yeah.
Or the rag.
Exactly.
That he cleaned the bar and the floor with. Right.
And that gets passed around. And you know how I feel about milk and dairy and food safety.
I do. Swill milk.
So this is a lot of this is made with swill milk.
Of course it is. Makes it blue.
It's really, really bad. And can you imagine? So I bought a banana at a Starbucks once and I was starving and I only had like 10 minutes to eat it. So I peel this banana and I realized
I'm
standing in the middle.
Wait.
Yes.
Wait. You say you only have 10 minutes to eat a banana as if a banana takes any longer than 45 seconds to eat.
You're right. But what I was thinking was like finding an appropriate place to eat a banana, because standing in the middle of a Starbucks, a crowded Starbucks, eating a banana as
it's a
woman.
Banana. It's okay. All right. You know, that's true. There's a lot that I completely disregard as a man.
Uh-huh.
I apologize.
There's no banana eating in front of people. No. So at the Hokey Pokey Man, can you imagine getting a glass dish of ice cream and having to stand there and be like,
lick it, yeah.
And trying not to make eye contact with the Hokey Pokey Man? Like, I just want some ice cream. That's what parasols were invented.
There's more jokes in here that I'm going to think of at like the middle of the night.
Okay. Yeah, I'll put them in a Siri voice.
Exactly. In a Siri voice. Ken says.
Penny licking. I don't want. Right. So this was disgusting on many, many levels. So, right. You hand it back. Nasty, nasty, nasty. Lots of people drop dead. Ice cream is super popular. You know, this is the one thing at the festival or the carnival that everybody's going to go and get something of. There were entire groups of families wiped out. From listeria, from pneumonia, from tuberculosis, from all these both foodborne illnesses that they got from the swill milk or the bad cows or the bad dairy. Dairy had been sitting out all day and then made into ice cream.
Sure.
And then also from, you know, Joey who licked it in front of you. Right. And who knows what kind of panty crickets Joey's working with. So it's not good. If you haven't listened to our episodes on food or food safety or milk, then again, please go do that now. Eventually, Louis Pasteur walks in. He sees the germs. Jon Snow, who knows everything, traces a cholera outbreak to a communal water pump. Robert Koch figures out anthrax is real and what it is. And so through all of them and their science-ing, the penny lick is outlawed.
Thank goodness.
Hallelujah. I can't overstate again how many people it made sick. It's just truly, truly shocking. And what's funny is they refused to think that it was the food or that it was germs. It was miasma. It was because, you know, carny folk.
Right.
They smell of cabbage and they give you cholera.
Right, with the small hands.
They even blamed vanilla because this is something new and exotic. And they're like, oh, I got, you know, that vanilla is making me sick.
Right.
No, honey.
My goodness.
Where do you buy your ice cream with that fewer hokey pokemen around?
Right.
Not mine. I don't want. Oh, God. It must have been like all glossy. Ice cream really made a splash in the U.S. In the early 1800s now, there was a young black man named Augustus Jackson who truly mastered the art of ice cream making. Up until then, it's mainly vanilla. Okay. It's like, you know, vanilla and then you might get some stuff topped on top.
Right.
But Augustus Jackson is going to make a lot of other flavors. He was a very gifted chef. He'd actually been working in the White House since he was 9 years old. Eventually, he became chef at the White House. He worked there for 20 years.
Wow.
James Monroe, John Quincy Adams, and Andrew Jackson, no relation that I know of. He was well-loved, super responsible for the family's meals as well as state banquets.
Okay.
And at a lot of these, he would serve this ice cream that he had mastered. In 1837, Augustus left the White House to return to Philadelphia, where he was from, where he was born and raised, where he opened up a catering.
Sorry, slow tonight. I just got it. Keep going.
It's all good. Where he opened a catering and confection business. Mm-hmm. He became one of Philadelphia's most successful businessmen.
Cool.
1837. Black man. That's amazing. Like a titan of industry in Philadelphia.
What year did our Oyster Kitchen God have his restaurant in New York City? Was it right around that same time?
Yeah, I think it was around the exact same
amazing,
time.
Amazing.
Right? Yeah. That's super cool.
It's super cool.
Yeah. So Augustus is known as the father of ice cream. So if you look up the father of ice cream or who invented ice cream, a lot of times Augustus's name is going to show up because he actually developed these flavors that were beyond just vanilla. He also developed his own formula. So French ice cream, as I mentioned before, is made with this heavy creme anglaise base. Mm-hmm. It's delicious. It's rich and decadent, but man, it's a lot. For other reasons too, but it's just, for me, it's really, really dense. Augustus made what would become known as Philadelphia style ice cream. So that's an eggless ice cream. He added extra salt to his recipes that really gave them a punch, but it also helped them to stay colder longer.
Sure. Right.
And that meant that longevity for when you're delivering it around.
Mm-hmm.
He packaged it up in these giant tin drums and sold it to his fellow Philadelphians and became, again, one of the wealthiest businessmen in Pennsylvania.
Awesome.
He never patented anything.
Of course.
He openly shared his recipes and his manufacturing process with other ice cream makers, predominantly black. And these people would then, since it becomes cheaper, since you know how to make it now, you can go further abroad. So he was kind of this, you know, Johnny Appleseed of ice cream makers, and all of these people just spread in the wind, and ice cream is going across the country because of him and his willingness to share knowledge.
That's
which
cool.
is so rare. And I, you know, it's beautiful. He was really, truly a great chef. And I think that's what it means to be a great chef, is being willing to share all of your knowledge and keep keep innovating and learning. A lot of this ice cream was being served in glass dishes, but what about the executive on the go who wants his ice cream as a portable treat?
Right.
I don't have time to sit around in your ice cream parlor, Mr. Augustus. This is beautiful, but right.
Well, you an executive would do. Pay somebody else to lick it for him and just right? like yeah,
regurgitate just carry it
into his mouth like a bird
on a mirror, like Jerome. So the first cone, uh-huh. the first ice cream cone sighting was in 1896. Italo Marchioni. Sorry, Italo Marchioni. It's impossible to say that without.
They don't let you into Italy if you no. sound like that.
Italo Marchioni, an Italian immigrant, invents the ice cream cone.
Okay.
Independent to Marchioni, Ernest Hamwi, who's a Syrian concessionaire, sees an ice cream vendor run out of cups at the St. Louis World's Fair. Mm-hmm. Ernest is selling waffles. So he jumps into action and starts making waffle cones for the ice cream guy. And it's a huge hit. I mean, the most popular booth at that World's Fair was the ice cream. And the ice cream guy's like, I don't have any cups left. Yeah. But he had all this ice cream. So boom.
Waffles and ice cream cones. Right.
Takes off like ice cream cones. Stephen Sullivan of Sullivan, Missouri, no relation, capitalizes on this. And he starts first ice cream cone factory. So there's the kind that's the waffle mm-hmm. where it's a cookie that's made flat. And while it's still hot, it's wrapped around the cone. Mm-hmm. And then there's also this kind of vacuum form one. Right. And those are the white cones with the, oh, it's like biting into styrofoam.
Yeah. Which.
So it's a batter that's yes. poured in and cooked within a vessel.
Yes. And then there's. Out. And then there's sugar cones, right? Which are.
Right. Sugar cones are like a waffle. It's like a.
It's a flat cookie.
A cookie. Got it. That, yeah.
Okay.
That gets wrapped around. Yeah. You're right. There's the waffle, which is super dense. And I've seen some, have you had the Japanese ones? They're like bubbles. No. So cool. They're fun. But they weren't back then.
They have them around here?
They sell them at, I think I saw them at Smorgasburg last year. And then if you go over to Koreatown, there are a number of places that sell them.
Got it.
Them and lots of butterfly pea. Butterfly pea is a, sounds great, Michelle.
Yeah, great.
Butterfly pea is a flower and okay. it's bright blue. Okay. And you can crush it into make a flour food additive. And that's what gives you these like super bright blue drinks.
Okay.
Or bright blue. That's yeah. It was kind of shishi a year ago, but it's still around because it's so weird looking. Ice cream cones.
Excellent.
Everywhere. By 1924, mm-hmm. 245 million cones are being made a year.
Wow.
The average American eats 22 pounds of ice cream a year.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. Guys, this is really an intervention.
Yeah, 22 pounds.
I need you to cut back okay. on your ice cream intake. In 2014, we would make 872 million gallons of ice cream in the United States. That's pretty impressive. That now, pretty we're impressive. We're not a country that makes a lot of stuff anymore. We make a lot of ice cream. Yeah. Out of all the states, DC eats the most. Even though they're not a state.
No, I was going to say, not yet.
Right?
Working on it.
Should be. Mm. But the thing with ice cream is it's such a wide variety of historical notations. I mean, we've got the good humor guy. We yeah. have ice cream trucks. We have, why are some of the jingles racist? Why are they considered racist? And for that, we'll have to ask people to turn into our second installment.
What?
On ice cream.
A two-parter?
It's a two-parter.
What?
This is a lot.
It is a lot. So wait a minute. Are you revealing the kitchen god?
Well, now? our kitchen god for this episode is Augustus.
Okay, good.
Augustus Jackson, for sure. He shared so much of his knowledge. He was such a genius chef in the kitchen and such a super cool business dude in Philadelphia that I he's awesome.
That's
he's
awesome.
Our kitchen god for this week.
Yeah, for this week.
Sorry, Nero.
Yeah, sorry, Nero, and your murderous mother.
Matricide.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And you know what? It's I forgot to tell you at the beginning of the show, so
that you're not recording.
No, not that. That in honor of Brooklyn, my pre-podcast snack that was not supposed to be pre-podcast. I was supposed to savor it throughout the podcast, but I drank it in about 14 seconds. Uh-huh. I made an egg cream.
Nice.
Yeah,
super, man, I love egg Brooklyn. Creams.
I know.
Hot tip, there's no egg.
I know. No. It's pretty good. And just the little dense chocolate milk at the bottom.
It's so good.
You can do that.
You know, it's so good. It makes me wonder. Did you ever watch Laverne and Shirley?
Mm-hmm.
Shirley would always have milk and Pepsi.
Right.
That was her go-to drink. And I imagine it's got to have a similar.
Did you never have Pepsi milk?
No.
Oh, really?
Like, that's so weird.
Yeah, we used to drink it as kids. We had whatever soda we had in the house.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you mix that. I can taste it right now, actually.
And yeah.
But I haven't had cola in 25 years, something like that. I don't drink it anymore. But yeah, no, I used to definitely drink Pepsi and milk or Coke and milk. And I didn't have egg cream until I was like, you know, I tried it at like a diner in high school or something like that. And
when you're a kid, you're like, I'm not drinking something called egg cream.
Egg cream, yeah.
So why egg cream, most likely where that etymology comes from, is because in French it means, you know, egg cream.
Okay.
Like and cream. So seltzer and cream, egg cream.
Egg cream. where's the chocolate come from?
That was an addition. You can have a regular egg cream. That's just
seltzer and milk
without the chocolate. Yeah. And then there's chocolate egg cream.
That's weird because if you order an egg cream at a diner, it's always at least around
here. I've had the plain ones.
Really?
Yeah.
I have to try it just plain.
Egg cream.
I'll have to try it just plain. It's probably really interesting. Yeah.
Tastes like milk and seltzer.
Nice dark.
Yeah. It's all about that chalk. And it has to have that chalky chocolate syrup in it. It can't be a high quality like ganache or something in there.
No,
it needs to be that
Hershey syrup. It's like it's got to be flooded.
Which is really
Hershey
just cocoa
syrup.
Powder and, you know, sugar.
So good.
And a little oil or something.
Super good.
Mm-hmm.
So I had that. So not quite ice cream, but I did have that. But yeah, and I drank it, but you know, like the Nestle Quick Bunny. I can't have any kind of sweet drink.
You can't have that. You can't. Nobody sips egg cream. It's like,
gone.
Gone. You're like, my belly feels funny.
Well, this was great, and I can't wait till episode 2 or part 2 of
part
episode 35. So wait, are we gonna now? I need to know this for technical purposes. Are we going to call it episode 35.2? Is this episode 35.1?
Do we need
to
change the files? Really? It's 35, right. And it'll be part 1 ice cream.
Don't edit this out. I think this
and part
needs,
2
I think,
you scream.
I think everybody.
Well, you want to know my method for creative method.
Very good. Yeah, I like that.
Ice cream, you scream. So yeah, we'll talk about popsicles too. Maybe I'll even have Xander come in to tell you about the creation of the popsicle.
Mm, I would like to hear that.
His favorite thing in the world.
So Donna and the kids went, and this is apropos to the conversation of popsicles, and we can do save this for next week if you want. But they went blueberry picking, and they came back with an insane amount of blueberries.
Amazing.
Yeah. So she made blueberry pie and blueberry muffins, and they made frozen blueberry yogurt popsicles.
That sounds fantastic.
They were really good.
Despite the presence of fruit.
You don't like frozen fruit.
Well, I don't like chunks of anything in my popsicles.
Right, it's gotta be smooth.
But that sounds really good.
It was really good. And because it's textured like frozen yogurt, but not like froyo, but like it had a yogurt. It actually tasted like yogurt, and it was very good. It was
they're onto something.
Surprisingly refreshing. Yeah, pretty good.
Are their fingers permanently stained, or they're
no?
You're okay?
It was pretty good. They came back pretty good. It was just the sheer volume of berries that was pretty.
Where
good.
Did they go picking?
Really close to here. There's a farm that does seasonal berry picking.
I've never gotten to pick blueberries.
Yeah. Next year you come out here. It's like about 15 minutes.
It started GoFundMe.
I know.
Help Michelle pick blueberries. I just want to pick some berries. So we're heading down to North Carolina. Gonna try out some yummy food down there. There'll be lots of she crab eaten and whatnot.
Nice. Well, right, we'll talk after your vacation then, and we'll talk about popsicles.
Yes, episode 2. Thank you guys for all sticking around and coming back and listening. Please tell your friends.
Yes.
Tell your television producer friends.
Yes.
All about the Kitchen Gods podcast. And wouldn't this be an amazing travelogue?
It would.
It would.
It would, despite there not being video attached to it, but we can always start recording those too.
Trust me. I could put on some makeup. Thanks, you guys, again. And feel free to reach out to us on our Instagram, which is at Kitchen Gods Podcast. Thanks again, Ken.
Thank you. Lovely to see you. And we'll talk really soon.
Talk soon. Yeah. All right.
All right. Bye.
Bye.